the first phrase of your last chapter in German. Das System Putin ist nicht kaputt, es erscheint aber nur wenigen unkaputtbar. Unkaputtbar. The system of Putin isn't broken, but nevertheless it seems it could be broken. And this is a question not only to the support or to the part of the Russian society which voted for Putin, but which organized the protest. Perhaps till today not the opposition in a strong sense, but nevertheless some sort of a... And you, it seems to me you prefer the word protest culture to the word protest movement. And how to... Because the word of protest movement is more concrete in a political sense already. But nevertheless, my question, how do you explain the experience, the unexpected, by a lot of researchers, the unexpected appearance of the protest movement at the end of 2011?
So just to give you some background, the protest movement that we're seeing today started really unexpectedly, as you said, and spontaneously, precisely on December 4th, 2011, on the day of the rigged Duma election in Russia. There were, from that day on, several massive demonstrations, especially massive ones in Moscow, but from December 4th there were demonstrations all over the country. And initially, those demonstrations were about election fraud, and they were very much propelled by the personal experience of thousands of election observers. And that is really the most immediate explanation for what happened at the beginning of December 2011. So you really have to picture this, the core of this movement, the initial core of this movement, as something that I would call a social movement of election observers. And this is something that we're seeing really across the world in recent years, and I compare the Russian case with an African country that I'm not going to name because it would be a spoiler in the book. So that's really how the protest started, and it later widened its focus to a whole number of other issues and topics. But initially it was exclusively a movement about fair elections and election fraud, which, and the simplicity of that message really allowed the formation of an unprecedented coalition, a super ideological, super party, super organizational coalition of all kinds of different groups, forces, and individuals, including legal opposition parties, extra parliamentary opposition parties, and most importantly, an enormous number of previously apolitical individuals. And that's really what is striking about this movement. So by now, we're seeing a movement that has sort of differentiated into a number of different topics that includes, for example, protests against the homophobic laws that Masha mentioned and a whole set of other issues. And there are also by now some attempts to form super ideological coalitions and to institutionalize these coalitions in a set of councils, elected bodies, etc., both in Moscow and on regional levels. And the movement developed a whole number of original forms of protest. So beyond the many hundreds of demonstrations that started in December 2011 and which took place in Moscow, in almost the entire country and abroad, we saw things such as nano demonstrations, which were essentially stuffed animals or other toys placed in public squares and holding banners or protest slogans to circumvent some of the restrictions of the freedom of assembly. There were, I don't know, car rallies with slogans. There were sled rallies. There was a whole series of Occupy-style camps immediately following the massive and violent demonstrations of May 6th. And these Occupy camps also started in Moscow, but then very quickly spread to a large number of cities across the country. So that's just a sort of a brief overview of what has been happening for the past almost year and a half. And since I'm not a journalist, I'm going to tell you what my research is based on. with a small team of colleagues, one of whom is here tonight, Manashe Isaeva from the Free University of Berlin, we have built a database of both protest events and slogans, which very immodestly I would claim has the potential to be more detailed and deeper than anything that's been done in terms of protest event analysis for any movement in any country so far. Because what we are doing is that we're collecting information about every single protest event that has happened anywhere in Russia or related to the Russian movement for fair elections in the world since December 2011. But we're also trying to collect every individual slogan that is displayed anywhere at the demonstration. What you're seeing here is a small selection of the photographs in our database. So we're actually linking descriptions of the protest events drawn from different sources, including citizen reporters, bloggers, people who are actually at the demonstrations and who either upload the information online or whom we contact directly through a variety of means, with information about the slogans, so that we can then look at the dynamics of slogans and also see individual variation and sort of different types of demands and slogans within a single meeting, which is very important to sort of counteract the organizers' claim and outsiders' claims about what the demonstrations are about. So based on this ongoing research, which formed the basis for the book, but the book is really just a preliminary report about what's going on, what I want to do is sort of briefly list a few misconceptions that people tend to have about the movement. And I'm sure everybody here in this room knows something about the movement, and a lot of you know a lot about the movement, but there are some common misconceptions which are kind of very difficult to demolish, but that's what I'm going to try to do. So the first very commonly held misconception, both in Russia and abroad, is that it's an opposition movement. And that's a very important terminological point. It's not. It's a protest movement. And it is a very important distinction, because it is not a movement that is organized by opposition parties, be they legally registered opposition parties or extra-parliamentary opposition parties. Those parties have been active. They've been active in street protests for many years in Russia. They have tried time and time again to organize protests of different shapes and sizes, and they've always failed. There has not been, to my knowledge, a single protest that assembled probably more than, let's say, 10,000 people in any one place organized by an extra-parliamentary opposition movement in recent years until December 2011, and since then we've seen several massive demonstrations with over 100,000 people. So the opposition parties created some of the structures that facilitated the organization of these later demonstrations, but they were really not the driving forces. So it is a protest movement. The distinction is important. You can sort of picture the importance of that distinction by looking at other national cases. For example, one of my favorite cases is the case of Serbia in 2000, when the entire revolution against Slobodan Milosevic was essentially organized, orchestrated, and propelled by a movement called Otpor, which was initially a Belgrade-based student movement, which then extended its reach to provincial parts of Serbia, and which became so powerful and so well organized, and also so decentrally organized, that it managed to exert pressure on the existing legal opposition parties to the extent that forced those parties to agree on a joint common candidate for the presidential elections and to sort of curtail their ambitions and work together. And it only achieved that because it managed to constitute itself as a separate protest movement, which is separate from the opposition movement. So that's the first point. It's not an opposition movement. It is a protest movement, although there is considerable overlap. And since the distinction is not clear to a lot of people in the movement itself, there are constant attempts, for example, to form a political party that would represent the movement, which are, of course, doomed to fail. The second misconception is that it's mainly or mostly or almost exclusively a Moscow-based movement. That is simply not borne out by the evidence. From the beginning of December 2011, there were protest events in over 100 cities, both in Russia and abroad. We found, I think, only three regions that had no protest whatsoever, something along those lines, including Chechnya, where it would simply be dangerous. In all other regions, there were protests of different sizes. And if you look at the number of people participating in those protests, which is very difficult to determine, but if you look at the rough numbers that one can gauge, and compare those to the size of the population in every given region, you see that some of the most massive protests were actually not in Moscow, but in northwestern Russia and in western Siberia, which have a long-standing tradition of sort of civic activism. And also, there are all sorts of very interesting local dynamics at work in different regions of Russia, which are not at all repetitions or sort of direct repercussions of what happens in Moscow. Really, there's the very interesting misconception that this is a middle-class revolt.